Para mi familia, siempre estoy en mi mejor momento. Por eso también quiero lo mejor en mi cocina. Y eso significa solamente huevos de Eggland Best. Siempre tienen un sabor tan fresco y delicioso, con 6 veces más vitamina D, 10 veces más vitamina E y 25% menos grasas saturadas que los huevos comunes. Entonces, ¿por qué darle menos a tu familia cuando pueden tener lo mejor? Eggland Best. Mejor sabor, mejor nutrición, mejores huevos.
Welcome to Untamed Blossoms, the podcast where we celebrate the wild and beautiful journey of womanhood. We're here to create a space where women can connect, inspire, and uplift each other. Untamed Blossoms is more than just a podcast. It's a movement. It's a gathering of strong, fierce women who are breaking free from society's expectations.
Our mission is to deep dive into the stories of incredible women who have embraced their authenticity, even in the face of adversity. We believe by sharing these stories, we can inspire others to do the same. Join us as we sit down with women from all walks of life who have faced their own struggles and emerged as the most authentic versions of themselves. From entrepreneurs to artists, activists to adventurers, we'll explore their triumphs and tribulations. Together, we'll navigate the challenges of self-discovery, self-acceptance, and self-love.
But Untamed Blossoms is more than just conversations. We're a community that gathers for events, immerses ourselves in the beauty of nature, and supports one another in our personal and professional growth. So whether you're seeking inspiration, looking for a supportive sisterhood, or simply want to hear incredible stories of women blazing their own trails, Untamed Blossoms is here for you. Together, let's embrace our wildness, bloom unapologetically, and rewrite the rules. Welcome to Untamed Blossoms.
Welcome to Untamed Blossoms. We're grateful you're here. I'm your host, Amanda Riley.
And I'm Christy Riley. Welcome to the pod.
Welcome to the pod. Last week of July.
Birthday week for Amanda Riley. Woo!
By the time you'll be listening to this, my birthday will have passed. It is July 31st, for those wondering.
And for those who are going to plan for the party next year.
Next year, yeah. Totally.
You got a lot planned for your birthday this week.
Yeah, I'm a busy week.
You do.
A lot of wonderful humans who are going to be spending some time with me. I'm really grateful for that. And then my actual birthday, I'm going to go to yoga.
Awesome.
I can't think of a better way.
Agreed.
To move the energy from the year out.
Tell me about your last year. What have you learned on this round trip around the sun this last year? It's been a big year for you.
Yeah, I was thinking about it this morning at the gym. So my 2-year sobriety anniversary is in November.
Yeah.
But this has been my first full year of my sobriety. So I was sober on my last birthday. And then now being 38 this Wednesday, still sober, thankfully. And I just can't believe, like, it's pretty shocking to think about. Since I've been, let's say, 18, sorry, mom, the first year of my adult life that I have been sober for an entire year of it, you know, from birthday to birthday.
Right.
So I was just thinking about all the things that I've done in 1 year that I wanted to do for what feels like a lifetime. And I can say there's many things that attributed to that, but the biggest one has to be sobriety for me, just because of how much time, money, resources, brain cells I had spent at bars. And I feel like this year, from getting through that first year of sobriety, I realized, wow, I was able to heal myself from November to July, right? Get that out of my system. And then this last year, I worked so hard to do the things I've always wanted to do. So I'm feeling really, really good about where I am professionally. I'm feeling very good where I am with setting boundaries. I'm feeling really good about working towards like big things I want to do.
Yeah. What about tell me, did you want to shed a light on any of those, a list that for the next trip around the sun that you're really gunning for?
Yeah. So I think continuing to stay firm in an abundance mindset is really important. I feel this is the first time I've said I'm not afraid of having what I need. And I've been able to go after those things. I have not booked up my schedule to the point of I'm just literally using it as an avoidance mechanism. I have not done that this year. I feel like I really made time to do things I wanted to do. Looking back at last fall and seeing how many hikes I went on and just like what we've done this year, even outside of being in nature. And then of course, starting this business has been huge. And getting away from those toxic, whether it be corporate jobs or toxic relationships, I feel like I've been able to see them for what they are and move away from them versus letting that like anger or fear bubble up. I've just been able to honor them and say, okay, this isn't for me anymore. So yeah.
Huge shifts.
Huge shifts.
Huge shifts. Yeah. Yeah. If you can see Amanda in pictures from before she was sober to now, you wouldn't even recognize her.
Yeah.
Like not because of any, just your aura, you know, just the light around you and the light in your face.
Yeah.
Is so much different. It's like the lights are on, right? They're fully on and there she is and she's shining bright in her full Leo self. And it's great. And every time I see her, I'm like, God, you look amazing. And she's like, I don't have any makeup on. I'm like, doesn't matter. You're like glowing. And you're just one of those people that the alcohol is really poisoning you in a real way. And so taking the poison out has opened up the light in your aura so widely that it's really been cool to watch this last year.
Did you ever go through, probably not because you're way better than I am at this, but did you ever go through the phase where you were like in the tanning bed or you're constantly tanning outside or like you were just like putting on so much makeup? Did you ever
in my teens and 20s. Okay. Yeah.
It's interesting looking at those photos.
Uh-huh. Where you're all glammed up.
Oh, glam in air quotes, might I say. Mm-hmm. I was tan, so tan.
Right.
I do tan easy, but I mean.
You're pretty orange. You had the orange dark glow going on.
Yeah, it was rough. And then I just looked so inflamed.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even when I was super teeny tiny. Even looking back then, you would think like, wow, like I bet she looks back at those photos and thinks, wow, she looks great. No.
Yeah.
I look dead inside.
Yeah.
So.
And this goes back to what this podcast is really about. It's all about self-discovery, right? And the journey of said self-discovery. And that road has a lot of twists and turns. And, you know, I think that I'm not the same person I was when I was younger in high school. You know, motherhood changed me, you know, and then down the road, you just keep reinventing yourself the more you learn about yourself and the more we go down the road of self-discovery and ultimately self-acceptance. You can discover all you want to, but if you don't accept your true self, you stay in the same space, right? You stay you're either medicating or you're unhappy or you're making the same poor choice over and over again until you can't make it anymore and you have to go a different direction. And that's a rebirth, right? And so I feel like I can look at times in my life where I'm like, do I know that girl? Do I remember her? Because, wow, this version of myself has, you know, and I have to just be very graceful in that moment and be like, wow, she was really... she did some crazy things, that girl. She said some crazy things. and maybe she wasn't the best mother because she was so young in the beginning. And, you know, like you can go down the road of really tearing yourself up or giving yourself a lot of grace for, I know I did the best I could with what I had at the time and what I knew at the time and my level of awareness and level of my self-awareness and self-acceptance. And, you know, I did wear a lot of makeup because I was trying to gain a lot of attention from the wrong places would wear skimpy outfits. And I wanted all the attention from all the wrong places. And what I really desperately wanted was for some partner to see me and hold me and protect me. And I wanted all of that I didn't get from my father figures growing up.
Yeah.
And so I went out in desperate search of that in my younger years. And that led to a lot of craziness and possible shameful behavior. So glad there's not videotape of any of those things earlier in my life. that my children can then see and Google. That would be awful. But I think that this whole journey is so cool, and we continue to evolve, and I continue to learn about myself and continue to accept myself to the point that this is going to sound crazy to all of you, possibly, but yesterday I went out in public with not a stitch of makeup on.
I love that.
And I went to Fox in the Snow with my husband, and I started to put on makeup, and he goes, "Would you please not?"
Oh, I love that.
And I said, "Well, honey, I just want, you know, cover up my dark circles and a little mascara." He's like, "You need nothing."
I love that.
And of course, I'm going to cry if I'm thinking about that. But here I'm going to be 53 years old this year. And I will tell you that very rarely will I go into a public space with at least having mascara. I will at least have some mascara on my eyes. You know, like there may not be a lot on, but there will be some mascara on the eyelashes.
Yeah.
And so embracing that, and I, you know, and I just looked at him and I'm like, who do I care that I'm impressing?
Right.
Or who do I have to put this? If my husband is totally fine with me the way I look right now, and it's really his preference.
Yeah.
Is that I get to be, he's like, nobody gets to see you this way except me.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Yeah.
And I went and had a great breakfast, and the place was packed. We knew 8,000 people there, you know, of course, you know. Yeah. So it was an interesting experiment, and I did it, and I was proud of myself for doing it. When I got home, I was like, good job, girl. Way to do that. You know, and sometimes it's those uncomfortable moments where you're like, this is the thing I need to lean into. If it's making me that uncomfortable, like, what is this about? You need to sit in it and be fine in it.
Yeah.
And why are you trying? Why do you need makeup on to feel like that you can go out in the world and present yourself? You don't think that the way you look currently is presentable?
Right.
Right.
And
what have I indirectly taught my daughters? Thank God they're Leos, and they could care less if they got a stitch of makeup on, and I've told them they're beautiful their whole lives just as they are. So they don't feel like they have to wear makeup, which is great. Yeah. They rarely wear it, and I'm so grateful for that.
Yeah.
And they are beautiful just the way they are.
Yeah.
I think Leos tend to have that natural sort of I am awesome kind of, you know. They don't need all that, right? Like, I feel like they don't wear that from an aesthetic point of view. So I love that. But I was like, you know, if I had a different sign of a daughter, what would they have taken away from that behavior watching me to put on makeup every time I left the house, that they weren't, that's what they needed to do in order to show up in the world? And so I did it.
I'm proud of you.
And I think this year's been a lot of firsts for you and I of facing things that we're really scared of and doing it anyway.
I wore black constantly. I mean, I had 90% of my clothes were black, full black. I would do big earrings, statement jewelry, you know, I have bright blonde hair. So it never was like too much, right? But I would wear, I'm talking raccoon style eyeliner, big aggressive eyeliner. And slowly over time, I was like, well, why am I doing this actually? Like, I love bright colors. Like, I'm obsessed with having as much colors around me as possible. Why am I wearing black nonstop? That's so interesting. And then I looked into it more and just really sat on that because it didn't make sense. And I got my Aura photos done right after I had gotten sober. I had every single color in the rainbow. I got it again recently, and again, every color. And I just think the more confident and comfortable you are with yourself, the more you allow yourself to be. And whether that's wearing bright colored clothing or not wearing makeup or even going full drag and saying, hey, I'm going to wear as much makeup as I want, however I want, but not doing it for the wrong purposes, right? And doing it as a form of self-expression versus I have to look this way for societal purposes.
Correct. I love that I saw that now they're telling little girls that, oh, mommy, why are you putting on makeup? And the answer used to be to look pretty. And now it is to look fancy.
Yes.
And I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
That's great.
So that you're pretty the way you are.
Yeah.
That's the message. Totally. But if you want to look fancy,
fancy,
then you can put on all the makeup you want. Little, lot,
But that's your fancy face. Yeah. Right? If you want to feel fancy one day.
Yeah.
And if you don't, that's okay. You're still beautiful the way you are. And I love that discerning statement of just changing that one word.
Yeah.
One word.
Yeah.
It's not pretty. I don't want to feel pretty. I'm going to feel fancy. Wow. That can be powerful, I think, for young girls.
Yeah.
Not to feel like they have to look a certain way. And you know, I Stan's girls, and, you know, they have a strong relationship with my husband, my bonus daughters. They just are so beautiful too. And they don't feel, they will wear makeup, but they also are okay to go on without makeup.
Yeah.
And I love that, you know,
yeah.
And I love that they're confident in their beauty without it.
Right.
But they do also use it to look fancy.
Oh,
sometimes, and I love that.
I will be listening to Reba McEntire's Fancy after this conversation.
Because that's all it's bringing
that's
up.
That's all I can think about. That's all I can think about. Well, today's topic is about divorce. So
yes,
both of us have been divorced, and we'll get into that in a moment. But before we start, today's conversation really is more around what we've learned and how we have come out of a divorce, a better, different version of ourselves, right? So it's very easy to man blame or talk about the person in the relationship that the divorce occurred in. But that's really not what today is about. It's more, you know, our journey through it, what we realized, how we came through it.
Yeah.
So why don't you start, Christy? Give us a little background, maybe.
Well, I've been divorced twice, more than you. So my current husband is my third husband. So first one, I think, you know, I was really young when I got married. I got pregnant right out of high school and felt like, due to my religious upbringing at the time, that I needed to get married or Jesus was going to be very angry with me. So we got married when I was 18. So I don't think that relationship would have lasted anyway. But we were sort of on the verge of breaking up when this pregnancy happened. So, you know, that sort of had the writing on the wall from the very beginning.
Yeah.
You know, so we weren't going to be compatible. We were very young, probably weren't going to be a good fit forever. We did it because we got pregnant and family pressures. And so, you know, I chalk that one up to just being really, really young. And then the second one was really just growing apart, you know, like raising kids and diving yourself into the full realm of parenting sometimes just puts you on a different path as your partner. And you wake up and, you know, it's just not the same as it was, and people's needs aren't getting met, and you're resentful of each other for a whole myriad of reasons that doesn't make a lot of sense necessarily, but you're angry and you find a hard time reconnecting. And I think that I've learned over time that trying to rectify some of that, and I think had I been more direct and honest with myself in that relationship and been more self-discovering of my own limits and boundaries and really putting those in place, I don't know if it would have changed the final outcome, but I think that it would have changed the trajectory of giving it an opportunity.
Yeah.
You know? So I think that women, we just sometimes get in this role, and I'm guilty for where I'm just as culpable as where my relationship ended as he was. And I think you're in a relationship. You're not just the one, even though I felt like I was the driver of the bus sometimes, doesn't mean that we were both not culpable in the relationship. Right. So, and by the time we did go to therapy, it was just too late. You know, it was just so much water under the bridge, and, wanted different things out of life and in different places. And, you know, I have children with both of these men, so I will always have love in my heart for them. Always. You know, I will always care about them in some level. I'm not one of those people that can just be like, I can hate that dude now, you know, like,
yeah.
And I have reasons, especially with the first one, to really hate them. But I don't, because that's not a good energy. I feel bad for what they've done and where they're at. in certain aspects, but that's a story for a whole nother podcast. But I do feel like I learned a lot about myself in all of those relationships, and I learned a lot about myself exiting those relationships. Mm-hmm. And I'm very proud of how my second husband and I handled our divorce and handled raising our son. He didn't hear a lot of negativity from us. Definitely not from me. I don't think so from his dad either. We just didn't badmouth each other, you know, and we would talk to each other over the phone and come up with what was best. And we were able to be in the same room together for events, and we were able to, you know, and so my son benefited from that. My youngest totally benefited from that. That is not what happened the first time around.
Yeah.
It was, he remarried a very mentally ill woman, and it was hell for years on all of us.
Yeah.
So, that was not how it happened. And so that was really, really hard. And my adult children are still in therapy from that whole situation. They don't have any contact with him. He gave them up for adoption when they were 14 and 13. So, so he hasn't had any contact with them. So, but that was a really difficult situation. And my second husband adopted the first, my kids with my first husband, and then we had one together. And so he's still a great dad to them. Even today, even after the divorce, they still consider him their father and his family their family. And they accept them, and it's beautiful. It's really beautiful.
I love that.
And we just found ourselves in a real place of not on the same page and not getting my needs met. And it was probably my fault, honestly. Like, I think what I needed out of a partner had changed, and either he wasn't in the space to be able to do that or was unwilling. Either, it doesn't matter, right? It doesn't really matter. It doesn't make him a bad person, but it did make me pretty miserable in the relationship. And if one is unhappy, he claimed to be also unhappy. I don't know if he would have ever made the jump to leave, or if he would have, I don't know, who knows, but I was the one that came and said, this isn't working for me, and I'm just not happy, and I need something different. And at the time, he couldn't give that. And that was okay. Right. Yeah. And instead of shame and guilt and misery, there was some of that. And there was definitely a lot of tears shed, and especially with the kids. And it was a tough decision. It was really hard to make. But at the end of the day, I tell all my kids, like, choose happiness.
Yeah.
Choose happiness, you know, and we're not responsible for other people's emotions.
Yeah.
We're responsible only for ourselves. And we want to honor other people's emotions, but we're not responsible for them. And so being honest and being direct, but also being caring and loving, and coming to a decision down the way of that was benefiting everyone, you know, and giving everybody the opportunity at happiness and a different opportunity in life. And now with my kids, the age they are, the first husband seems like another lifetime.
Yeah.
Right.
Do you have a hard time remembering those times?
Sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes I have a hard time remembering some of the good stuff. I think all the trauma sticks hardcore during that time. So when I reflect back to it, I can remember those gut-wrenching conversations and the kids being upset. And like, I can remember that stuff, you know, and I try to remember like times that it was good with him when we first fell in love, and you know, and we were kind to one another in the beginning, and we were just a bunch of kids, you know, we were kids. We were children at that point, you know, and babies having babies is really what happened. But as we got older, nothing really changed with him. And, you know, he was never going to be a good fit for me. And that was okay. But that meant I had to leave. Right. But I was picking people that I wanted to control.
Yeah.
That were safe.
Yeah.
Right. Not somebody who could necessarily like hold me and hold my energy and really, really strong in their masculine energy. And I need that. And I've definitely realized that over the last year and a half is that I desperately need that. I need a man to hold that space for me. In order for me to feel my femininity and to feel healed, to give myself space to let my guard down enough to be seen and held to heal some of that little Christy stuff that we talked about. And, you know, my current husband has been able to do that. And he's very strong in his masculine energy and is able to really hold that space for me and make me feel protected and taken care of and honored and loved and all the things, right? So that's been a lovely thing for me to experience. Not that my other husbands didn't love me. I don't discount that in any way. It's just a different container, you know, it's just a different container. And I probably wasn't ready for it then. I wasn't ready for it. And, but definitely ready for it now and relaxing in that I'm not defined by what I do and who I take care of and what I give and my productivity. And I'm just valued just by being on the planet. And that's a nuance for me to feel that way, is that I'm good enough just the way I showed up today.
Yeah.
In my birthday suit with no makeup on and my hair crazy and my Medusa hair everywhere. And he makes me feel that way. And I appreciate that. It doesn't come without work. You know, all marriages are hard. Mm-hmm. Being in a relationship is hard. Raising kids together is hard. And making sure that you stay those bits for connection, that time together, what are you doing as a couple, you know, is important. All of those things are really important. Date nights, important. That you're on the same page, where you're headed in life, where you're going, you're your best teammates, right? Like, those things are important. And when those things get off track, my only advice to people would be, you know, seek outside therapy quickly.
Yeah.
Before it's so bad that you're if you've already had the thought that I don't know that I'm going to make it.
Yeah.
This could be the end. You might be down the road too far. Yeah. You know, you might be down the road too far. Not to say that it's not possible. It would depend. Maybe that's just my personality. It's possible that that's me issue and not anybody else. That I'm sort of all in until I'm not. That I just go find help, you know, because sometimes how you guys are communicating just may not be that the other person's able to hear it the way you're saying it. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that the love and the things that brought you together is not still there and shareable and salvageable.
Right.
But it may take somebody to mediate you guys to get on the same page again. You know, once the honeymoon wears off, real life sets in and then real life changes. Mm-hmm. Sickness, you know, the sickness and health thing in your vows, that turns out to be legit, right? And so, but sickness is hard, right? And taking care of somebody when they're sick is difficult. And if that goes on for a long period of time, it's hard.
Yeah.
And if they're having their own struggles, you know, and when you got together, none of that stuff was in place.
Yeah.
Right? And you're like, everything was great. Or if it was there, I wasn't paying attention to it because we were in phase and everything was awesome.
Everything was cool.
Everything was great. But then that goes away. Your honeymoon phase is over. And then you're like, this is way harder than I thought it was going to be. Or we weren't on the same page in this and not on the same page in that. And so seeking outside help, I think, is real important.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I find myself, I'm not an expert, but I'm like, well, you know, I've done it several times. So I won't consider myself an expert, nor do I want to do it again by any stretch.
What ages were you for the first divorce and the second divorce?
So I was 26, I think, 25 the first time around. And then the second one was in my 40s. Yeah, I had a long period where I was sort of in a long distance, or not a long distance relationship, but I was in a relationship, but it didn't end up in marriage. Mm. And then I met my second husband, and then we were together for a lot of years. So,
yeah. I just asked because I feel like sometimes people think, well, you can only get divorced if you're in your 20s, and it was, you know,
right.
I mean, there's a lot of stigma around that versus it, none of that matters.
I think there's some normal times that they happen. In your 20s, I made a mistake. In your 20s. Late 40s is, wow, we've been raising children for a while and now we've lost all connection and now I can't stand the sight of you. We were in this together for the kids and now the kids are leaving and I'm out.
Right.
I feel like those are the two most popular groupings. I think COVID may have escalated that for a little while, where people were home together a lot, that may not have been victims of divorce, but ended up in divorce because of so much together time. But I also think that just highlights probably what you had as an issue before.
I mean, right.
It was being masked by you being able to be separated. If I had to guess, don't know everybody's situation, but if I had to guess, that'd probably be my guess. I think those are the two most popular times. You know, we had spent a lot of time together, but my second husband came in and he had teenagers, you know, preteens that I had in tow, which is a huge, he was a bachelor in Chicago when we met, right? Like coming to suburbia was a, in the Midwest, although his family was from here, was a big leap, and jumping right into parenthood of three teenagers that their father had just given them up for adoption. And he's taking them, you know, he went from 0 to 100 real quick. And then not having the same social structure here that he was used to. I just think it was a lot, that he was such a good person. He just wanted to so desperately do the right thing that he kind of lost himself in all of that too, you know? And so suddenly we're just raising kids, and that's what we're doing every day, and kind of getting through it. And he had his own coping mechanisms for that. Not all of them healthy. And, you know, and next thing you know, I'm going off on my spiritual like awakening and riding bikes and spending as much time in nature as I possibly could. And, you know, found ourselves on a path of separateness and not able to get back from that. And we had created a beautiful life together and a beautiful home. And, you know, that all started over. Yeah. And you're starting over in your 40s financially and everything else. It's not easy to do. It's not an easy choice to make when it's easier for the kids and everybody's happy in that space. And my kids had already been through it once before, and they were settled into this beautiful family that accepted them and this beautiful man who accepted them as their father. And so making that choice for the both of us was really hard, but you know, it was necessary.
Yeah.
It was necessary at the time. For sure. And now I have a lovely husband and a lovely marriage and happier than I've ever been. And, you know, but I think a lot of that is not about my husband. It's about me.
Yeah.
And the healing I've done for myself, and really been, worked really hard over the last, you know, 10 years to really look at my trauma and really dive deep into healing and accepting myself and searching out my own peace with all my families, my dad that abandoned me, you know, all of the things, right? Traumas in early childhood, just head first. And there's been some real moments over the last 10 years. It's been really, really hard, but I'm grateful that I'm doing it. It's never over, you know. Yeah. I'm still discovering things about myself, and I don't know that that's ever going to change my whole life. I think we continue just to peel back an onion layer, you know. Yeah. Every so often you're just, oh, there's another layer. Oh, yeah. Thought we were done with that. No. Okay. Just further down, deeper, sweet. But it's great. It's been really good. And because of that, I've been able to really be in a relationship that I think is one of the healthiest that I've ever been in. And I think that's a direct connect. So if you're in unhealthy relationships, the first place you should look is inside. Yeah. And that's my biggest takeaway from divorce, I think, is that, you know, it's not the other person's fault. You are not a victim. You have created the space that you are in with this person, with yourself. You are absolutely the curator of all of that.
Yeah.
And so to blame it on other people is irresponsible and just deflecting on what you need. You need to heal yourself, figure out what it is that you need. And if that person is not the right person for you to give you what you need in that moment of that story in your life, you know, then that's not the right person. And you need to find the right person, and you deserve that, you know?
Yeah.
Totally. And sometimes being alone for a while to figure that out, which is something I didn't do. I was jumping right back in relationship. I was never single for very long.
Yeah.
You know, I say that I'm a you know, serial monogamist, but I need to be in a relationship. That's what I thought, that I needed that security. Little Christy needed to have somebody that was there. I was really afraid of being by myself.
Yeah.
And had a huge sense of abandonment. And so
now I joke. I'm like, if something happens to this husband, I'm going to be the weird lady with, you know, a dog and a garden, and I'm going to become some sort of shaman probably. Like, I would become a weird herb lady probably. I don't think I would venture down the road of being in another relationship. I don't need that like I did, you know?
Yeah, truly.
I don't know that I would venture at this age down that path unless it smacked me upside the head with something that was really magical and powerful for my own development, right. Maybe. But for the most part, I'm like, I would be totally content to be by myself at this point. I would be incredibly sad if that happened, if something happened to him. But I would be okay by myself. And right. This is the very first time in my whole life that I could say that and be 1,000% honest.
Which is why you're happily married.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that I'm like, I'm totally cool with being by myself if that happens.
Yeah.
I enjoy my time by myself. You know, I find things to do. I've got to, you know, so I definitely could go down that road easily. So.
Yeah.
What about you? Tell us about your journey.
Different. In a lot of ways. So I do want to go back to high school, though, for a moment. You're probably thinking, what? Well, I feel like from an early age, and I've talked about this before, that I was kind of told I was pretty emotional, right? And I was told that I felt too many feelings, or that I was just, man, I was always feeling feelings. I feel like from a very early age, I felt very safe with men who are softer, not like soft in a bad way, just that were less.
More in their feminine energy.
Yeah, more in their feminine energy. I always was attracted to that. And I think it's because I had so many emotions and I didn't feel safe. You know, I didn't feel safe with men who were more of aggressors. So I always found myself liking guys who did not know yet, but definitely did not like me. And your husband, my older brother, was very quick to point those things out for me when I was crying to him on the phone. I can remember vividly. And I remember going to college and then thinking, okay, I keep getting told that this emotional softness of me is bad. So I'm going to work on this. And in college, you know, I dated the opposite. I dated guys who were jocks, and not that all jocks, everything I say, just know, it's not stereotyping. It was just my experience. The people I dated in college were way more aggressive in that way and were, you know, just much more
masculine,
but in a way that they just weren't in tune with their emotions whatsoever, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so I don't want to equate masculinity to being always emotionless, but these dudes definitely were. And, you know, I just partied my way through it. So I didn't care. And the one person I was deeply, I would say, in love with, I knew was not attainable for me. So that was great. And my feelings were protected because I only dated or, you know, was intimate with men who I knew were never going to be it for me, right? And then the ones I really, really, really liked, I knew it wasn't going to work out either. So I gave myself a very cool shield of protection against all of this. And I graduated, moved to Grandview. I was like, okay, I really have to start dating. But I was terrified, and maybe I still am, of falling victim to romance. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is not real. Romance isn't real. And I pushed really, really hard against that. And then, similar to you, I met someone that I felt like I could control and that I could just do whatever I wanted to do and didn't have to worry about them because they would let me do what I wanted to do. And I felt like when I met my first husband, I was about to be 25. So I also had established a lot of very close friends and a routine. And I was working for my brother at the time. about to head into corporate America, actually. And I just knew that it wasn't deep. I know that's like horrible to say after the fact, but I knew always from the very beginning that we were not compatible. But that does not mean that I didn't think the marriage was going to work, because I thought this is just something I need to do. I need to get married. Might as well be him. We had broken up like 7 times prior. We call off our, not to everyone else, but we together, I had called off the engagement at one point drunkenly, of course, so that didn't stick. And I had always knew that I was never going to be deeply connected to this person, that I did not believe that was a possibility. If I didn't believe that that type of like relationship romance even existed for real. So I didn't feel like I was losing out. I just felt like, okay, well, this is what I'm going to do. And it turns out when you think you have control, you might not. And it really snowballed into a situation where just honestly, I was being manipulated a lot with my own words and feelings to a point of confusion. So I don't know if you've ever felt like this, where you feel like everything that you say will be filed away to be used later. So you really can't get out of the situation because you're kind of being blackmailed at every turn, right? And in our relationship, I just realized, and you said it very clearly, this is my bad. I did this. I got us here, because if it weren't for me, because another toxic trait I have is like, I just want to help so badly get to someone to their potential. And that's not romantically. That's just like, if you tell me you aspire to do something or be something, I want to push and help you get there. And I will be relentless with my efforts to help you achieve. And so I was doing that and just trying so hard, but then there was no romantic feelings there at all. Or like deep, deep connection. So anyway.
Either direction, right?
Either direction.
From you or from him.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so.
You quickly fell into a roommate sitch.
Yeah. I mean, and we were genuinely that from the very beginning. Luckily, we didn't have a house. We didn't have kids. Nothing was there to like separate when the time came. But I will say at every turn, I knew this was bad, but I just was like, well, I don't care. I can still do what I want to do, be who I want to be. And then the weirdest thing happens, and I will tell this story. A lot of pretty rough things occurred, and, you know, a lot of really emotional, tumultuous things. But I had just got done with a lifting competition, and I won. And I was so happy. I'm a little competitive. And
Slightly.
I was so happy I won. And my ex said, hey, let's go to dinner. I'm like, great. I want to go to a local cantina. I love that place. Free chips, first of all.
Yeah.
Queso dip.
Right.
I'm smashing. You know what I mean? And he decided he didn't want to go there. And he pulled into a different restaurant. And we sat outside. And I thought, if I don't say anything this whole dinner, will he say something or will he be on his phone? And I'll be damned if he didn't say anything to me. And when we got home, I was like, I got to get a divorce. You know, like, this isn't going to work out. And I think that's an interesting thing. I mean, we can talk about that a little bit, is it's rarely the big things. Mm-hmm. I feel like the big trauma or the big disagreements or fights, it's a death by a thousand cuts.
Yes.
And eventually you're bleeding out thinking.
And the thing that brings you to the decision is the most innocuous little thing that you're like, and that's the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that one thing. It was just, what brings you to it is like the weirdest thing.
It's the strangest thing. And I do think when you're at that point and you're bleeding out, you think, oh, I could just put my hand over this and stop the bleeding.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happens, is all those small things just put the pressure on you until one day you snap. Yeah. There's a whole show about this. It's called Snapped. We're not promoting anything scary here. But the point is, I think everyone gets to that spot where they just can't do it anymore.
Listening to your story, is it possible that because you were told, and this is a story that we've told about Amanda before, about playing small with her emotions, right? Is that we found out since in her human design is that she's supposed to be all the emotions all the time. It is absolutely part of her design and what she was brought here to do. Is that because you are forced down a rabbit hole of being emotionally unavailable, your emotions were unavailable to you. That you chose an emotionally unavailable partner because that was familiar to you, right? Like then there's no emotion. Because if somebody had shown up and was all,
oh, I would have ran, right?
You'd have been like, see ya, right?
And so, I did, right? Like there definitely were people I was dating who, I just told this story the other day. Someone I dated asked me, do you want kids? And I was like, no. I was 23, 24, right? So I was going out to the Arena District literally five nights a week, the old meat market, as they call it, dancing my ass off at Brothers. No, I don't want kids. And he said, okay, well, I don't think we should continue dating because I really want kids. And I thought, thank God I dodged that bullet.
Yeah.
I could have never been with this guy. There's no way. And now I find myself knocking on 38's door.
And wondering
in 2 days. And I think that would have never worked then. But when you open yourself and you allow yourself to feel things that you told yourself, just don't even think about this.
Yeah.
Then suddenly you're flooded with all of that emotion. And that's what's really hard is I used to be someone who never cried. And now I cry all the time.
I'm wearing off on her. I cry all the time. Now she's crying more. But I think you're learning to be in your emotional body. And I think that's really important. And as you have become more in tune with your emotional body, I feel like you're understanding what you need more in partnership. And I think that's a dance, right? Is as we continue to evolve, it's a conversation that I know Stan and I have regularly is about if my needs are changing and coming into menopause, it's definitely been different for us. And I'm having to have conversations about how my body's changing and how that impacts him and intimacy and all the things. And having moments where I feel really self-conscious about that and the changes. And then him just making it all okay.
Yeah.
You know? And so that growing piece of if I didn't say anything, right, and I didn't make him aware of how I was feeling in that moment, it could have led to a real, like, him assuming what my distance was for or my mood was for and getting resentful and, well, you were mad at me for whatever. And I wasn't really mad at all. I was just feeling self-conscious, right? Yeah. And how we can misread some of those cues. And as couples, it's just been a nice learning curve for me and validation of, wow, if I speak my truth, it turns out I'm giving my partner an opportunity to step into that in his fullness. And I think what leads people down separate paths is that if your partner, and sometimes this happens, they're just not on the same growth curve as you or on the same path, or suddenly because you've changed or you're becoming more in touch with your who you're really supposed to be, suddenly you're changing the contract of that relationship. Right.
Well, I think you even said it. You said something of like, I'm afraid this person can't handle this emotional or this box that I am. Right. Like, I am afraid that if I let them open who I am, that they will run. Right. Or they just won't be able to take it or handle it. And I think what you're saying makes sense. The more you are like, well, I'm just going to continue showing up as myself. And the right person finds you, right? The right person will embrace that. And then the wrong person makes you feel bad about it.
Yeah.
And that's hard because, you know, over time has been one of my biggest struggles is I think to myself, who could possibly handle me if I shared all of my feelings all the time? Who could possibly deal with me weeping every time I see an animal that got hit on the side of the road. Like, I cannot tell you how many strong feelings I have that I'm just like, nope, nope. Don't. Do not. Bring it up. Relax. And then I work myself through it, right? And then I think the more you step into yourself, allow yourself to be who you are, knowing that my human design is a whole lot of feelings. It's being comfortable and being willing to say the right person will then.
Right. And it, and your current partner could be that. It could be that it ends up being the end of the relationship if your current partner can't or won't, is incapable of meeting that need for you. And
right.
That doesn't make that person wrong or terrible or getting into victim mentality. If, you know, if you're owning your own shit,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the end of a relationship is inevitable because, man, I really realized that I have not been honoring myself in this way. And I really need X, Y, Z, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It could be a thousand things. It could be, I'm ready to be a mom. And your partner, who you've told all along, is like, I don't want babies. Now you want a kid? What? No, we're done.
Yeah.
I'm out, right? Like,
yeah.
You're changing the contract.
Yeah.
And that's just an example. That's not necessarily about what's going on with Amanda, but like, because you said that story, but I'm just saying, like, that's an example of how somebody is changing the contract,
yeah,
of what you've agreed on. And sometimes it's an emotional contract. It's an actual physical legal contract. It's a financial contract. Like you've by marrying someone gotten into this real, real contractual situation with this person.
Yeah.
And you've agreed to all the terms. And sometimes one of you changes the terms.
Yeah.
Through growth, through loss, through mental illness, through whatever it is, right?
Yeah.
Like we go through so many different things as humans, as this experience unwinds, that giving yourself permission to be happy and giving yourself permission, you know, I told you I researched divorce in the United States, you know, back in the 18th century, we couldn't get divorces. You just had to be disloyal to each other and stay married.
Yeah.
Because they did like 90 divorces over the course of 100 years or something.
Yeah.
And as women have gotten more rights and had been able to support themselves, the divorce rate has steadily increased, not just in the United States, but across the globe.
Yeah.
And as women's rights continue to, and having opportunity at taking care of themselves and financially being able to take care of themselves, now we're in an equal situation where we don't have to stay in these relationships. But I will say that knowing yourself is the start, you know, just being really aware of who you are and being really selective of your partners, and knowing yourself before you do that, you
what
know,
are, what
because
are
the chances of you changing the contract as you're growing are pretty high. And
yeah.
I used to have a ton of shame around the fact that I've been divorced twice, a ton.
Yeah.
I'd be like, oh, I'm that. So, you know, my mom was married and divorced 5 times, 2 to the same man. So 4 different husbands. And I was always like, I'm never going to be like that. I'm going to have one husband and one and done, and we're going to be together forever. And I was totally romanticizing the whole thing. And it was mostly to despite her, because I felt tumultuous effects of that, right? Of her making those decisions brought a lot of pain and suffering to my brothers and I. So I didn't want that, you know? But I also realized that there's a way to leave a relationship in an elevated way that doesn't cause a bunch of pain and suffering for everyone. It doesn't have to, but it's not great. And the whole goal would be to know yourself well enough that you're choosing a partner that you guys are going to be able to grow together, but it's no guarantee.
Yeah.
It's no guarantee. And things can change.
Yeah.
Things can change in a big way. And you just don't know what the future holds. And so I just give myself permission. That's been, whether that's good, bad, or indifferent, of happiness is important.
Yeah.
This life is very short.
Yeah.
And I would rather be a divorcee of whatever number that is and happy than not.
Right.
And know that I lived a life full of love. I didn't shut myself off from love. I didn't shut myself off from being
happy and in love with people. I'm a lover. I love lots of people.
Yeah.
I love humans. I love women. I love men. I love kids. I love animals. I love trees. Like, I have a lot of love to give, right?
Yeah.
So I used to feel really shameful about the divorce, but I'm like, man, I could have just shut down and never married again after the first time.
Yeah.
And just never loved anybody else.
Right.
Never had Ty. Never got to experience loving the girls, right? Like,
yeah.
And when you look at it from the lens of love, like, I still have love to give
yeah.
to a ton of people. And I love so many people in my life. I wouldn't have that opportunity had I stayed in a negative relationship. And, you know, I still see my ex-husband's parents and wish them well. And, if it were left up to me, I would greet them and hug them. They don't want that. That's okay. I respect that boundary, but I would if that was them. Like, they were great people to me and my kid, continue to be grandparents to my children that were adopted. You know, like, I have no ill will towards them.
Yeah.
Not at all. So, because it's wasted energy.
Yeah.
And I'm here to love people.
Yeah.
And sometimes that means I have to leave them.
Yeah. So, I want to talk a little bit, you know, on TikTok, the youths out there,
the youngins,
the interwebs, there's a thing going around talking about, like, your icks, right? Like, things that you just are like, ugh, what the other opposite sex, or I guess anyone that you're trying to date. So I think we can often get inundated with messaging around superficial things not being good enough, right? Mm-hmm. Or like, oh, the way this person eats is giving me the ick, or oh, the way he wears socks with his sandals, right? But I think the more life experience you have and the more relationships you're in and the more you know yourself, which I think is key, a lot of those things really go away and you're left with a list of non-negotiables for yourself.
Right.
Do you have a list of non-negotiables, or are you willing to share the things that you know at the core of who you are you need? And nothing to do with your partner, but things that you have gone through and how you are in today's world that you just know you have to have. What are those things?
Oh.
Put you on the spot.
Yeah. That's a good question. That's a great question. I would say that my core values are my family comes first. You know, as a divorced mother, I came with baggage, they like to call it. I fucking hate that term. And I'm going to use that word because that's terrible. If you're referring to children that you ushered into this world, young souls that you chose to bring in as baggage, I'm sorry. That's a douchey thing to say.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
Yeah.
I have responsibilities and they are my absolute responsibility.
Yeah.
And so, and that's led, you know, down the road of, I'm very family oriented. And so being with somebody who's not as family oriented or willing to take on that role and responsibility is not interesting to me. So somebody who holds that core value would probably be a must for me. And Stan has that. So it's one things that we share. I would say respecting my femininity is now a non-negotiable. You know, I'm not a sex toy. I'm not a grab bag. I'm not, you know, something that can be played with and tossed away. Like, you have to have, I demand respect in all ways. And see me for the beautiful existence that I am. You know, and I feel that way about myself, and I'm not bragging, but I've worked really hard to feel this way. Yeah. And I want to feel that from my partner.
Yeah.
And I would say commonalities. You know, I think it's hard to be in a relationship long term if you don't have some common goals, common interests, things that you can do together. Even if that's the same, you have the same drive for, you know, thinking about your next, your dreams, right? Even if you share and, like, we love to go down the road of just dreaming up crazy things that we may not ever do, right? Just something that you share that's just that the two of you have in common that you can expound on, whether that's you really love being physical together or being outside together. What, you know, I love being in business with this person and we're driving to save the world or have whatever it is, right? You have a common goal. I think being with somebody that has some commonality with you makes it exponentially easier to stay connected. And that's really, I need a connection with the person that I'm going to be sharing my life with. I need to feel deeply connected to you. And if I don't, it's a problem for me.
Yeah.
And if I feel disconnected and there's times, you know, this is not, it's not a rom-com. There are days where I don't feel connected to my husband and I love him so massively.
Yeah.
But sometimes things get in the road, your stress, your hormones, the kids, the schedule, the businesses, the stuff, right? And so, or maybe I've made a couple of bids for connection and he's so distracted that he missed them.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. I used to pout and that would be the way I got my needs met, is he would know something was wrong because I was pouting and not talking to him, right? Fill in the blank, whatever you do, right? Yeah. We all have our thing.
Right.
Mine would be to be quiet and withdrawn because I'm a pretty outgoing, happy, light person.
Right.
If I dim my light in my world, everybody notices it. Mm-hmm. Are you okay? What's wrong with Christy? Is she okay? Mm-hmm. She's not talking much. Right? Like, I'm pretty easy to read. So something, you know, too. Like, you know immediately if I show up and I'm not. Am I right, Mom?
Yeah.
You're like, what's happening?
Yeah.
You're similar in that way. I knew to, you know, as soon as I show up and you're not great, I can immediately tell.
Yeah.
So instead, the last couple of years, I've been adopting a new, like, hey, I've been trying to connect with you for the last 2 hours, and here's how you've responded to me.
Yeah.
I need you to put down your phone. Now, I could meet that with a lot of aggressiveness and being nasty and mean. I really try to be like, this is what I need right now. I need you to put your phone down. I need you to hold me.
Yeah.
I need you to look me in my eyes and tell me what's happening in your world today. Like, I need some connectedness, right? Yeah. And he's really good about, like, I can do this, but I don't have the mental capacity right now to do that.
Yeah.
Right? And it's a real conversation about, I have nothing left today to do that. Like, I can stare into your eyes, but if I speak another word, I might implode.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's where he's at in his overstimulation and learning about our each of our things in human design. I now know where he's at, right? Like, I understand when his bank account is empty, when he can no longer give anymore. Like,
yeah.
He's like, I'm out. I'm cashed out. No more. I'm just going to sit on the couch and veg out because I literally been so overstimulated all day that I can't do anything else. Right. And so now our conversations become, where's the middle ground? Mm. You can't give so much to business that you have nothing to give to to me and the kids when you get home, or when we have that opportunity to be a family, because we are a combined family. It takes more energy. Mm-hmm. It takes more initiative. It takes paying attention. So it's shifted our conversation as to the point that now we're looking at how we can, you know, pull back from some of that. What can we offload that's really stressful? What can we take away from our collective load that will help alleviate some of what he's experiencing?
Yeah.
And that's really great communication. Otherwise, I could have just been a victim of the fact that his business has been just beating him over the head lately and I'm not getting my needs met. And I could sit back and say, but I need you to just do this for me, right? I need you to just know that this is what I need and give it to me.
Yeah.
But he may not have that in him, right? So we have to pick and choose. So it became a real conversation. And I was proud of us for getting to the end of that, right? And that it could have really ended in a different way and a really ugly way.
Well, it sounds like another one of your core values or the core things that you know you need is strong communication.
Strong communication.
Because then you can adapt and flow either way. But when the other person's open to that communication, they can hear you. That's the key, because you might not always be on the same page.
Right.
But a non-negotiable being, hey, we communicate openly and honestly.
Yeah.
Puts you on the right path.
Yeah. I have Brene. I don't know if anybody's listened to Brene Brown, but she had she was doing a talk once. And I love this, is that her and her husband, once they had children, every night, she's like, you know, marriage is not ever 50-50, especially once you start raising children.
Yeah.
She's like, some days if both of you are working and you get home, I would look at him and they did give themselves a score as to how much energy they have left, from a 0 to 100. And she's like, and if I was a 50 and he was a 50, we were great. We split the night. Everything goes well. She's like, but if we ever showed up and collectively we weren't adding up to 100%, we made a game plan for the night as to how we weren't going to fight and kill each other and be mean to each other. And I was like, because if you've got 20%, your partner's got 20%, how are we going to get through this night?
Yeah.
Who's going to do what?
Yeah.
And then let's make this an arrangement early on in the evening so we can just get through our night, yeah, because we're both exhausted. Totally. And what can we take off our plates collectively because neither one of us has the energy? And I think that women a lot just take on that extra percentage without having that conversation.
Yeah.
And then become really resentful with it at the end instead, yeah, of just saying, I can't.
Yeah.
I'm not. And laundry's off the table tonight. And we're going to order out dinner and we're going to wash the kids barely and we're going to put them to bed early because, yeah, and this is our collective plan. And I think that's brilliant, is to be like, where are you at? And then that's some of the stuff that we talk about is, I just, you know, I didn't have the energy that night for this, and setting that expectation for me so that I know on the way home, like, man, I have been talking nonstop for hours. When I get home, I would love it if we could just have
a quiet time.
Yeah. Just, I need a couple of hours, right? Yeah. And just him asking and setting that expectation is huge for me.
Yeah.
Because my abandonment self sometimes goes to, he's mad.
Yeah.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
Is everything all right? Why aren't you talking to me? Have I done something? Are you mad at me? Like, I'm in, yeah, this constant reassurance mode because of my trauma.
Yeah.
And I need that reassurance if things are bad. But if he tells me ahead of time, like, hey, I need some minutes.
Then you reset.
Yeah. Like, what do you need from
recalibrate
me? You know, and I know that that's coming. And so, but it does take strong communication. So that is another one of mine. Yeah. So what are yours? Tell me what you've come away with over the last
years of life.
Years since your divorce.
I would say adventure is a huge one for me.
Yeah.
I had a friend who said something that I've always remembered. I worked with at Verizon, and she said, you never let grass grow under your feet. And I was like, what? And she was like, you know, like, you're always just doing things and doing new things. And I think that's why I've been in the training world for so long. And that's why I love learning and why I got my MBA. Like, I love doing new things. Like, it excites me to learn something
new. Me too.
My gosh. Yeah. So for me, like, the sense of adventure and the sense of, let's go do something we've never done, I'm like, whoa, that is great. So for me, that's really important. And two, I would say, like, love language wise, I'm definitely a physical touch. And before, I used that more as an armor versus a need. So, you know, wild it out for a few years of my day and substituted that physical touch as filling that need, which now I realize is not the same, right? So for me, just like being wanted physically and being just like touched and loved on is really important.
Mm-hmm.
Communication also big, setting expectations and understanding what the other person needs and wants, and really listening versus the blame, complain, defend thing, which I learned through work and has been one of my favorite lessons, is if you're in a spot of blame, complain, or defend, you're not hearing anybody. You're not really letting anything happen. You're not letting an effective conversation happen. So staying away from blame, complain, defend, any conversation that you can in a relationship will help so much, because the more you're doing that, the less you're communicating of how you actually feel, and you're not going to move forward. So that would be one. And I think the last thing, which might sound silly, is just like a love for music. My head is a jukebox.
I love that.
My head is a jukebox. I'm just listening to songs all day long up here. So communication through song, whether it be karaoke, I know this is so silly sounding, but like, I love karaoke. I love listening to music. My friend Carrie has a karaoke machine that she like brings places so we can just sing together. Like, I really, really enjoy. I was in every music, everything growing up, and I played violin. And I'm also a really bad singer, but it doesn't matter to me because I love it. And when I go for walks, I listen to a certain type of music. I have a music genre for every season that I really like. I make playlists. My nickname's DJ Rowdy Riley. Must I say more?
Right. That's right.
But no, I think that connection to how music can move you and change you and help you and get you through some of the hardest, like I can listen to a song and be taken back to some of the hardest moments and just cry so hard. It doesn't even have to be a sad song. It just can remind me of that moment. So that kind of love for the arts in that way, and same way I like physical art as well, like hanging around my home, and why I clearly surround myself with a lot of artistic people who write and paint and all of these things. I just think it's a genuine, beautiful form of expression. I think when you have that love together in a relationship, it brings out the best in both of you.
No.
So
I agree.
Those are the main things.
Well, I would say that, you know, while we're not experts on these things, we've learned a ton.
Yeah, really.
We've learned a ton, and we continue to learn a ton every single day.
Yeah.
And for all of you who are not sure where you're at in your relationships or you're calling in that perfect partner, I think my last bit of advice would just be make sure that you are really in touch with yourself.
Yeah.
In a real way, in an intimate, deep way, and the right person will show up. And divorce is less likely.
And there's that quote that it's like, I'm looking for someone to compliment me, not complete me.
Right.
I think that is another big thing we both learned is you complete you.
Yep.
Once you do that, you find someone to compliment you. You don't need someone to be your other half. That phrase is so silly. You don't need someone to be the opposite, to pull out the things that, no, none of that really matters. It's complete yourself, be as whole as you possibly can, and then be open. And I think that's what brings in the right relationship.
You want somebody who walks alongside you on this journey.
Yes.
100%. While they're on their journey. Yes. Alongside you in congruency, having great times together. That's really what you hope for. So.
Totally. Yeah. Well, we did post on our Instagram about topics that you all would like to hear Christy and I tackle in our solo episodes. So This was one of those topics someone brought up to us, and that's why we talked about divorce today. But if you have an idea, or if you're listening to us talk and think, I want to know more about that, you can always reach out to us on Instagram, Untamed Blossoms, our email info@untamedblossoms.com. I'll put all of this in the bio in today's episode notes. But we would love to do a solo episode together every once in a while. So please share your thoughts and opinions.
Yeah. And if this can resonate with anybody, please share it with friends and family.
Well, thanks everyone for listening. Make sure you give us a follow on Spotify, Instagram, Facebook, all of those things. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.